I reckon people hear a lot about fatty liver in the prevention field, and a lot of people have fatty liver and go, well, what am I meant to do when I have the diagnosis now?
So this is the whole relationship with obesity and overweight.
And metabolic syndrome and lots of other things.
Just before you go on, we've had a story on the Health Report suggesting that we underdiagnose it because of the way pathology companies report on liver function tests.
I was trying to get to exactly.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm so sorry.
I was going to test
I'll shut
your
up
memory.
From now on. You go on.
I was going to say, do you remember the story you did? Because
no, I don't remember that story. Tell me about it.
Well, you might have a normal liver function panel on your blood test. It doesn't necessarily mean that everything is okay, and you may well have fatty liver. So for anyone who is pondering, do I have it? Do I need a scan? I've got fatty liver. What am I meant to be doing? This is for you with some practical takeaways. I spoke to Professor James O'Byrne, who's a consultant hepatologist at Sunshine Coast University Hospital in Queensland.
Fatty liver disease, the term was first coined in the sort of late 70s, early 80s. It was originally termed non-alcoholic fatty liver disease. So we've known that people who drink too much alcohol can get deposits of fat in their liver. But back in the 80s, people noticed that sometimes people who were overweight or diabetic were getting fat in their liver and it wasn't related to alcohol. So then it was termed non-alcoholic fatty liver disease. And that name stuck for a while. But people worried that it was a disease that was defined by what it wasn't rather than what it was. So there was a move to change the terminology. And certainly in America and Europe, they've gone for the term of metabolic dysfunction associated steatotic liver disease, and steatosis being the medical word for fat, whereas in Australia and the eastern side of the hemisphere, we've retained the metabolic dysfunction associated fatty liver disease, which I think is a bit easier to understand for many people.
So what causes it then? Is it lifestyle? Is it genetic?
It's a bit of both, actually. I mean, it's normal to have some fat in your liver. So about 5% of your liver cells will have tiny droplets of fat in them. And that's normal because metabolism of fat is something that the liver does. But if you're overweight, if you have a certain mutation in a gene, and certainly if you're diabetic, that fat can start to increase in the liver and more of the liver cells become laden with these little droplets of fat. And that doesn't really affect the liver function much. It might cause the liver test to be elevated when your GP checks them. But the worry is the longer that goes on over many years, that fat can cause some inflammation. And as the liver tries to heal the inflammation, it lays down scar tissue, which over time begins to link up. And that's when people develop cirrhosis and all the complications that can go with that. It's not true that everybody with fatty liver is going to develop cirrhosis. It's actually a minority of those people. And one of the challenges we have as doctors is working out who's just got a bit of fatty liver and it's never going to be a problem versus who's actually on that pathway towards developing scarring and cirrhosis and complications thereof.
You mentioned that some people who have these fatty deposits might have changes on their liver function tests when they have a blood test done. We've spoken a bit about liver function tests on the show over the year. Does everybody with fatty accumulation have changes that are visible on the blood tests, or could you have it and have a completely normal result with your GP when you have your liver checked?
You can have a completely normal result, and you can actually even have cirrhosis and have completely normal liver blood tests. And this is why we're asking GPs as part of our national guidance that's just been rolled out to just be aware of the risk factors. They are people with type 2 diabetes, people who are overweight, people with abnormal cholesterol and other fats in the blood. And think about, could this patient have fatty liver disease? And the best way of looking for that would be with an ultrasound scan, because we can see the texture of the liver changes if it's got fatty infiltration.
So even if someone has a normal blood result, you've gone and got your results back, but if you're at high risk, you've got diabetes, potentially living with overweight obesity, then you might need that next step of an ultrasound.
Absolutely. And if you have the ultrasound and it confirms there's fat in the liver, then your GP can do a very simple test just on the blood test you've already had done, a little algorithm or a formula to calculate whether you're at risk of having fibrosis or scarring in the liver.
And then there's the option for more scanning, isn't there, James? A thing called a FibroScan, which can look at the stretchiness or elasticity of the liver and give a bit of a better picture. What kinds of people are needing that further step in investigation?
So in the fatty liver space, what we're saying to GPs is if you can't rule out that somebody might have scarring based on that simple algorithmic blood test, which we call a FIB4 test, which is essentially can be calculated just on your normal bloods, then we're asking the GPs to refer people in for a FibroScan. And FibroScan's a really cool gadget. It's been around for a few years now. It was originally designed to test whether cheese was ripe in the middle, you know, in France.
Yeah, delicious.
So you had the big wheels of cheese and you wanted to work out whether it was ripe in the middle, but you didn't want to stick a big skewer into it. So it was invented to do that. But then somebody realized that that'd be a good way to look at whether the liver is also stiff or soft in the middle. And because, of course, as you lay down scar tissue, your liver gets harder. And that's what the machine, the FibroScan, measures. It measures the stiffness or the hardness of the liver. And it's really, really reliable. It's repeatable. It doesn't hurt and it's quick to do. So we think it's a great test.
Do people have symptoms with fatty liver, or could people be roaming around and have absolutely no idea that they've got it?
The vast majority, and this is the worry, the vast majority are completely asymptomatic and will often only develop symptoms when it's really advanced. Some people might have a degree of pain in the right upper side of their abdomen, but for by and large, it's usually asymptomatic until it's quite advanced.
What can you do about it, James? There often tends to be a lot of talk about prevention. People talk about preventing fatty liver, eat lots of fruit and veggies, move the body, weight management. What if you get the diagnosis? What are the options for actually treating it?
So the mainstay of treatment is, as you say, is lifestyle change. It's weight loss and it's exercise, and we recommend 150 minutes of exercise a week. Weight loss, we know, is really difficult. I mean, sometimes even just changing your diet for healthier options, even if it doesn't lead to a degree of weight loss, can be actually healthy for the diet. For instance, replacing the fats in your diet with olive oil, for instance. Olive oil is rich in polyphenols, which are anti-inflammatory. That can be a really good change. If people are thinking about changing their diet, I would point them towards the website of the Liver Foundation. They have got an absolutely superb section on healthy eating for liver disease that is much better than a lot of the other information out there, because actually they produce recipes that are culturally appropriate. So there's recipes that are high in protein, low in fat, and healthy for your liver for the Thai community, Indian community, Chinese community, and Western Australian community. So it's actually really, really a useful website, and there's lots of information on there.
And what about medication options? So the lifestyle, as you said, is really important, but what if that's not enough?
Well, we realised that, you know, doctors were very good at telling people to lose weight and exercise. And the reality, the way we live our life, we're very busy. It's a struggle to find all that time to exercise. It's a struggle to always make those healthy options. And of course, when cost of living is difficult, eating healthily can sometimes be more expensive. So it is difficult. We recognise that. And because it's such a problem, there are now a whole bunch of medications that are coming through which are designed to help with fatty liver. There is unfortunately nothing licensed for fatty liver on the PBS in Australia at the moment, but we hope that will change soon. A drug called resmetirom is available in the US for treatment of fatty liver. And of course, we all know about the weight loss agents like Wegovy and Mounjaro. And these can be very helpful both for weight loss and have been shown to improve fatty liver in terms of reducing inflammation and scarring. But they're not available for that indication at the moment in Australia.
So you're talking about those GLP-1 medications that are often being talked about for weight management might actually help in fatty liver as well.
Yeah, and interestingly, some of the changes, the improvements in fatty liver appear to be independent of actually losing weight. So there might be something about modulation of inflammation in the body that's helpful.
And you said that before, that even some dietary interventions and tweaking some things in the diet, even without a shift in weight, may yield benefit.
Absolutely. I would recommend anybody who knows they've got fatty liver disease should probably be drinking 2 to 3 cups of coffee a day. It has to be good coffee.
And why is that? Tell us why. But we want to hear about it. Coffee's good for you.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it's rich in antioxidants. And again, these plant polyphenols, which have this magical effect on soothing inflammation in the liver. So it's the one good thing I can tell patients in the clinic. Say, when I ask them if they drink coffee and they sort of grudgingly say, yeah, I do. I say, well, that's great. Carry on. Because all the evidence from big population studies show that your risk of fibrosis progression if you drink coffee is reduced. That's not the same as saying if you've got fatty liver and you don't drink coffee and you start drinking coffee, it's going to make an impact. But certainly coffee doesn't appear to be a bad thing.
If you've got fatty liver, James, I'm assuming you need extra surveillance, ongoing monitoring. Are these people who should be seeing their GP regularly? They might see a liver specialist or a gastroenterologist as well?
Yeah, so in the national guidelines that were released last year, we focus on a number of things. One is the fibrosis assessment or the scarring assessment, and those people who haven't got scarring in their liver based on their FIB4 test can remain safely in primary care, but they still need monitoring. So don't forget that a fatty liver is an expression of a disordered metabolism, and that can lead not only to fatty liver, but can also lead to an increased risk of cardiovascular disease, an increased risk of some cancers. So people do need monitoring and do need advice. If patients are deemed to have more fibrosis and are at risk, then these are patients who will be seen in a secondary care setting, either in a gastroenterology clinic or a hepatology clinic. And these are people who will have more investigations, closer surveillance, and may actually be invited to take part in clinical trials and other interventions to help.
That's Professor James O'Byrne, who's a consultant hepatologist at Sunshine Coast University Hospital in Queensland.
And the good news is that there's something we can do even if we don't know we've got fatty liver disease.
Yes. All the stuff that you love banging on about, if you will, Norman. Mm-hmm. Mediterranean diet and physical activity, all the simple but really good stuff that's not always easy to achieve.